Excited to welcome Wyoming head coach Sundance Wicks to the basketball podcast. Wicks just completed his first year at the University of Wyoming. In his first year at Green Bay prior to Wyoming, Wicks was named the 2023-24 Horizon League Coach of the Year. He was also named the Joby Hall National Coach of the Year, which is presented annually to the top rookie first-year head coach in NCAA Division I college basketball. That season, Wicks posted an 18-14 record after the program finished at 3-29 prior to his arrival in 2022-23. That 15-game turnaround tied for the ninth best turnaround in NCAA Division I history. Wicks spent 3 seasons previously at Wyoming under former head coach Jeff Linder. The Cowboys reached the NCAA tournament in 2022, finishing the season with a 25-9 overall record. Prior to his time in Laramie, Wicks was the head coach at Missouri Western for 2 seasons. He also spent 11 years as an assistant at 4 different colleges, including Northern State, Colorado, Northern Illinois, and San Francisco. Wicks also built the Arizona Power Basketball Academy, serving as a skill instructor and director from 2011 to 15. Prior to launching, he spent 5 months training NBA pre-draft prospects at the Impact Basketball Academy in Las Vegas. Wicks began his college coaching career as a graduate assistant at Northern State under the legendary Don Meyer.
Hey, Coach, a brief time out from the podcast to bring you the Analytics Minute, sponsored by Hoopsalytics. Do you really know which plays, sets, and actions are working for your team? On offense, how valuable are paint touches and post entries? On defense, do you get more stops playing man or zone? Like high-level college and pro teams, you can use an analytics system like Hoopsalytics to get data-driven answers to help guide your in-game strategy and practice emphasis. With Hoopsalytics, you can track any action or set and see the resulting points per possession. Plus the video link stats, you can view your successes and fails and see if it's a play design or execution issue. And you can easily build organized film sessions from these video clips. Hoopsalytics brings the most powerful analytics to teams of all levels. It's easy to use and affordable. It's like AI for basketball coaches. Discover how Hoopsalytics can help you make better data-driven coaching decisions. Visit hoopsalytics.com/ball today. That's hoopsalytics.com/ball today to learn more and start analyzing your game for free.
Sundance, welcome to the basketball podcast.
Man, I'm like a kid in a candy store right now. This is one of those things where you get a text from Chris and you get a little nervous at first and you're like, man, this is about to be exciting. Let's see where this goes. So let's dive down some rabbit holes, man. I'm happy to be here.
Rabbit holes we will go. And look, I appreciate all your prep in advance. It was wonderful to get a really good deep look at your program and some of the success that you've had, obviously, over your time as a coach. So we're going to dive into so many of those areas. And coach, just full warning, we're going to jump around a little bit because there's so much I want to get to with coach. But let's start with teach and reach, this philosophy that directs your culture.
It's funny, you start off as you're taking theory coaching basketball classes in 2004 when you're a GA, and the theory of coaching basketball class was with Coach Meyer. He was just, when you played for him, he had Coach Smiley on here, who's my best friend. And when you play for him, you have 4 years of player notebooks. You're writing all these things down. You feel like every single college basketball coach, which my players laugh at me. They go, where do you get all these maxims or sayings or phrases? And I go, I was inundated with those with Coach Meyer. And you didn't know it at the time, but when you have guys come into your academy, you got Bill Self, Pat Summitt, John Wooden, Dick Bennett, Rick Majerus, you have them all, Morgan Wooten, you have all these guys come into your coaching camps. I'm transcribing notes for them as we go through it. And you feel like you have an idea of a philosophy, but it's way different as a player. You know this. Like as a player, you're wondering and asking, why are we doing this? But then you can't really ask why. So you just die on the hill and you do what you're told because that was. This modern era of basketball, players ask why more than ever. And I think understanding why you do things is really important because you have to have a level of competency that your players see. And they go, all right, I trust what he's saying because he can explain the why. Back when I played, right, you did it. You had to do it and you went full tilt on it. I kind of like that because I think it takes a lot of the thinking out of it. There's too much thinking, you slow down. But a long-winded story to a short question. Is I learned the different side of this when I became a GA for Coach Meyer. I played 1 year in Sweden, felt like a 9-year-old man. I blew my back out. I was like, you're all one major injury away from having to get a real job. Coach Meyer called me after they won the conference tournament championship. Steve Smiley was a redshirt senior that year. And he called me, it's 3 a.m. Swedish time. I'm listening. And I'm talking to Smiley. I'm so happy for you, big dog. Congrats on the championship, going to NCAA tournament. Coach Meyer just grabs the phone. He goes, "Sonny, when are you going to stop being a crappy professional basketball player?" But he said it in his voice, and he goes, "You need to come back and be a GA for us next year." And I'm like, "Yep, I'm probably going to do that because whatever coach told me to do, I just did it." And so I went back and saw a different side of Coach Meyer I'd never seen before. The amount of prep, the way he studied the game. I'd never seen a guy wake up at 4:30 a.m. and stay up till 10 o'clock at night. Probably not good for your health, right? You got to prioritize sleep. But then you start taking your theory coaching class, and Dr. Jessie Dodd, sports psychology and sociological aspects of sports and society, she's trying to help you frame what you're going to be. And I thought this was a great saying. I'm going to teach, I'm going to motivate, and I'm going to relate. That was my first ever coaching philosophy is 23 years old. Teach, motivate, relate. And I started, you rewire yourself after years of being in the profession, Chris. And you go, well, okay, I'm teaching, but I'm teaching first. I'm teaching. So I have to be able to teach first. And then I'm going to motivate them because I'm teaching them. And then I'm going to motivate them to do what I taught them. And then I'm finally going to relate to them. And I just thought that was a little bit ass backwards. All right. And I sat there, okay, you can't just teach, motivate, and relate. It actually has to work backwards, right? You have to relate to them first. People don't care how much you know till they know how much you care. Coach Meyer said it all the time. You have to relate to them first. If you can relate to them, you can finally maybe find the button that motivates them, but you have to have a relational quality there, right? So before you can teach, you have to be able to reach. And that's the teach and reach philosophy is you got to be able to reach a young man, a player, or a young woman, wherever you're at, you have to be able to reach them and meet them where they're at and find out who they are, what makes them tick, and then you teach them. Motivation, I've found out, is very fleeting. Motivation is it comes and it goes. You can't just sit there and rely on motivation. I love the idea like we're all charismatic leaders and we can win a locker room and we can do a pregame speech and it gets them ready to roll. Holy crap, man, does that stuff never last or what? And so you got to be able to reach them first, meet them where they are, and then you better be competent in your area of expertise and you better be able to teach them second. Coach Meyer was a master teacher, very fortunate to have played for a master teacher. And then ironically, Coach Sather, who was his assistant at the time, who's at North Dakota now, Paul Sather was one of the masters of motion offense. I think we'll dive into some of the new modern eras of basketball, different types of motion now, or what people classify motion. But I remember Sather doing clinics, and he was as gifted as any Power Five head coach that came up at the time to talk about their stuff. Bill Self's high low, three out, two in offense. Sather was so good at teaching it. He was a master teacher. And he still is. And to that point, Coach Meyer bred a group of guys who understood the value of teaching. But I think the art of coaching, not less the science, is you can run a motion or a hybrid Princeton or whatever. The art of coaching is the relationship side. And that's where we don't spend enough time as coaches diving into the reaching. Because we'll listen to the podcast and we'll learn about the teaching, but we won't dive up enough into the reaching because none of the concepts or schemes matter if you can't reach the player to perform at their peak and to get the most out of every single human being that you have under your care. So I guess that's where the philosophy was born and bred as a 23-year-old GA in 2004.
I love that. And the reaching part so important. I love that you flipped that. And Paul Sather, just so you know, did episode 236 for all the fans that are listening and want to go back and dive into that one. He was tremendous as well. And I think at some point I got to get all three of you on and we just do Don Meyer stories and
Oh.
sayings. Because I think the young people don't understand how much of an impact he's had on me and you and everyone else. And so many coaches around the world still reference him and still use some of his sayings.
What they call him? They call him the coach's coach. That's what Pat Summitt called him. I think Pat Summitt coined him the coach's coach. And it's just, if you can go back to coachmeyer.com and still look at some of the academy notes and just read some of the notes from the academies. Now podcasts are academies. They're mini academies. And then the Larry Shyatt Clinic that he used to have in Florida that he'll have in Charlotte this year, that's a Coach Meyer-esque type of clinic. It's a heavy hitters, the best of the best. But we get these podcasts now that are mini clinics, and you do such a fantastic job. It's just awesome.
Yeah, thank you so much. And what is a sucker?
Oh, this is a Jeff Linder phrase now. Like I get Jeff Linder is a master teacher in his own right. I was very lucky. So Paul Sather, Don Meyer, motion coaches, Rick Majerus, Dick Bennett, blocker, mover, three out, two in, four out, one in, masters of the motion. I felt like a blind spot for me was ball screen offense. Really, I grew up in a motion teaching setting. And when you start to see how the game's changing, you better be ahead of the curve. I think Jeff Linder was, he was, he's been so far ahead of the offensive curve for a long time, which makes him elite and special. So when I left Missouri Western as a head coach to come be an assistant for Jeff, was not just to come back to Wyoming where I'm from. That's a bonus. It was to learn under a master teacher of ball screen offense, spacing and respacing manipulation. And then conversely, I learned the art of spotting the sucker, right? And people say, find the cone can't move, the cone just tips over. Spot the sucker, find the cone. But spotting the sucker is an art. And you had to learn that when you're working for Jeff on film to be able to watch a guy who would maybe look at the ball screen coming. It was unbelievable. He'd see some things and he'd be like, watch number 12 over here. Number 12 always, he always peeks before the screen gets to him. He's afraid of getting hit, so he always peeks. And that's a great time to refuse. He would watch a guy who's get a sucker switch. So you always put your best defender on another player, on another team's best player, correct? And so that's one way of you have to be able to get the matchup you want. So set a screen. With most teams, they put their worst defenders on just a guy maybe who runs off screens in a lot of ways and just know he can lock and trail. They never have to put him in a ball screen. You just lift Rick Jeffries out of the corner, set the flat, and get Hunter Maldonado into a dribble down on the other team's worst defender. I remember at Washington, we did it a ton with just coming out of the corner. We called it a lift action. And we just brought a flat screen up on the corner to get Maldo to his left shoulder, Barkley dribble down. And we put Cole Badgema in dribble downs in 21-22 for half the game against Washington at Washington and beat him on the road. And that's spotting a sucker in a bad defensive situation. Guy's bad feet or he's not physical. You could spot suckers who are bad with coming off screens, any screening action. Just a guy who maybe just loses you for a second because he has terrible vision off the ball, and you're just running an action to manipulate him coming off a double stagger. And now you create a two on the ball advantage or a late show or a late hedge. It's the art of finding the worst defender for the situation, right? Not necessarily the worst defender on the floor, because there can be guys who are elite at defending the ball screen, but awful off the ball. And there can be guys who are elite at locking and trailing and chasing guys off screens. And Drake Jeffries was so good at that. Take Marcus Shavers out of any game, just being able to get there on the catch with his length. But then if you put a guy in a ball screen for a guy who's a good lock and trail guy, it's not where you want to be. Or you find the guy who's a big lunker and you put him in a pick and pop situation at the nail versus the rub that Oklahoma City Thunder runs a lot now. I thought Linder was one of the first guys ever. Linder and McCollum were the first two guys to start the rub situation at the nail. That's one of my favorite actions. It's my favorite spot to put a sucker because it's just an island of isolation. And you watch these awkward things happen where you're like, I can't believe we just created the easy shot in basketball because of a guy at a nail and everybody flat, one guy at the top of the key. It's spotting the sucker. It's a fun game. It's a fun game. Takes some intentionality with the eye now, though.
I love that. I love the specificity of that. And that's how it's become. I think coaching's become so much better because we're not just generalizing, we're identifying very specific things. And I love that part of it. The difference between a bad defender and a bad ball screen defender could be very different. So great, great concept. And you mentioned space, respace, manipulate space. Coach, I get asked a lot about how to teach spacing and how to manipulate space. So can you go a little deeper for all of us with that?
This is great. It's one of my favorite things. And this is something I've studied a lot just being with Jeff and then moving forward. I thought two guys that I've spent a lot of time studying, obviously working with Jeff Linder, but also studying Ben McCollum, having coached against him when I was at Missouri Western. But then Ben is just, he's one of those guys. He's really gracious in his time as far as what he'll, when you're one-on-one with him, he'll try to keep things a secret. He won't do a ton of clinics and tell everybody the secret sauce that he call secret. But when you spend some one-on-one time with him, he's an open book and he's really, really transparent. And working with Jeff was like, it was like uncovering like these secret codes to basketball. And I think that our art here is understanding that you can scale simplicity, right? You can't scale complexity. And you could take very basic alignments. You could take a side ball screen corner fill, just a fist action. We call it a fist action, just a side ball screen corner fill. And you can scale that in a way by changing angles of the screen, right? To make sure that you can manipulate the coverage, whatever coverage it is. And I think that's the first part of all this is what Jeff taught me was you have to identify the coverage. And I think that's one weapon if any coach could go into a game to allow their players to have, that's where I was so bad at Missouri Western. We would run an action and I wouldn't even know, like I wouldn't even have the coverage ready for the guys, but we're going to run it. So now my guys are trying to figure out something the minute they get blitzed. I was a bad coach in that way. I'd never coached ball screen stuff, but I wanted to do it. I just hadn't learned it. And so I had to know that blind spot. And humbly, you take this side ball screen corner fill, And let's say you're just going to go attack a lateral. You're just going to attack a level, get up to the line of scrimmage, level lateral, kind of not the guy's going to drop, not let the roller get behind him. Okay, if you do that, right, and then you got a guy at the opposite slot or the opposite wing and the opposite corner, whatever that is, that however you decide to space a high slot or the wide spot in the corner, what are you going to do there? That's the first side of this. If you got two elite shooters behind the ball, you may not have to move them. The gaps may be stretched out. And so the first level of manipulating spacing is making sure that you don't have roadblocks out there. That's a big deal. And if we try not to recruit roadblocks, meaning that we would scout teams and just say, if there's a guy that can't shoot, you just plug the nail or you plug the hot spot and you just never move. Just plug the paint and let them throw it to him. And if he shoots 10 threes, we're winning. If he shoots eight threes, we're winning. Sometimes you let that guy who's a dork or whatever you want to call him, the plug man, sometimes he has a night. Yeah, that's you're gonna have to live with that. But what are you gonna do with that backside? So great shooters, just stay spaced. You don't have to move because you know you're a threat. And the minute they try to overhelp or rake in the gaps, you kick it, spray one more shot, and you should be paint touch rotation threes. All right, let's say you have a driver, your four man is trailing the play, you're running a side ball screen corner filler or drag, and your four man can't shoot it. The first way to manipulate spacing is we just dive him. Just dive him right to the dunker. We're trying to create a double gap. So you just dive him right to the dunker. Your corner lifts about to the break, just so he can get a quick kick if he gets to the nail. And we're moving hand help. We're eliminating the hand help at the nail. So we're trying to move the nail as much as possible or move the tag as much as possible. Another way, you see it a ton, slide the two side. So let's say you got a four man in the corner or a wing in the corner who can't shoot it, but you got a shooter at the slot. Now, as you come off an attack, you're sliding the corner. And you're sliding the slot and you're creating that double gap once again and eliminating the handheld. All right. We're going to install a blade action. This is funny. You start to dive into these things. You can complicate simple things, right? So a simple thing is just what are you going to do when you're going against a different coverage where maybe they're in a drop and we want to create a driving advantage for the guy in the corner instead of sliding him. We'll blade the shooter right down to brush off the corner guy's defender. And then it'll almost be like a dribble drive action. We'll slip the drag, create that, we call it AOA, attack off the ass, create that attack off the ass right there, get down into the paint. And then that corner man who's a driver is circling behind and we're pitching it to him. We call that a blade. And that's another way of manipulating spacing. And so I think that's just, it's easier on a two side. Here's where I've been really diving into. And I think this is good just to have these organic talks is how are you manipulating the spacing on an empty with a three side? And I studied Liberty. I've watched Alabama. I've watched Drake. I watch a ton of them. And I love like Alabama, with Mark Sears last year, when they attack a three side on an empty, they're always moving the corner. They're always moving the corner. They're burning the corner. And because what are they doing? They're looking roll first. They got great rim threats. And then if the roll's taken care of because the guy furthest away in the hot spot is really helping, they're burning the corner. And so, like, you got roller corners, really two simple things. And then they let the other two guys at top decide what they want to do, interchange, smash, set a flare, or just stay there and play off the get. Liberty does a lot of that as well, but Liberty loves to just slide that guy in there and they'll play almost a two-side game right there where they're working high-low action and playing off a lot of rifles or pigs on the backside. It's just, there's a lot of ways to manipulate it. You just got to decide, I think, what works well for you. And how far do you want to go down that rabbit hole? How much complexity do you want to have with it? I've found that the less you have, the better you get at it.
Hey, coach, a brief interruption of our podcast. You know the best player development is coaching development. So let's work together to get your entire basketball organization or program unparalleled expertise and access to Basketball Immersion's group memberships. It's affordable and your players will thank you. Contact us today, basketballimmersion.com. Contact page or DM us on X or Instagram. Get your coaches full access to our extensive coaching video library, detailed courses, and modern evidence-based coaching ideas. You can have proven coach development at your fingertips for all of your coaches. Elevate your coaches, elevate your teams, get started now. Basketball Immersion Group membership is where innovation meets excellence. Contact us today at basketballimmersion.com, contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Now back to the podcast.
And you mentioned already identify the coverage. That's a coach's responsibility. What I
Right.
love about your phrasing is how you continue down the path of saying, that's a coach's responsibility. Now, what's the player's responsibility? And then what is coach and player responsibility? Can you highlight those things? Embrace the coverage and attack the coverage.
Yeah, this is great. As I said, this is I never take credit for crap. I'm not very smart. I'm smart enough to know who other smart people are. Ricardo Patton once told me, you don't have to have all the answers, you just got to know where to find them. And I think that's a great level of humility-driven leadership, is not having all the answers. Coach Meyer was a thief, he stole everything. We give a lot of credit to Coach Meyer, but if you look back at it, a lot of the stuff he said, he got it from somewhere else. And so identifying it as the coach's responsibility, and your scout prep, your offensive attack, and how you organize it. Embracing it is the hard part here. This is the hard part, because embracing it is the players have to embrace it. Now, some programs are really blessed with extremely creative players that can do a lot of things. And I think the hardest part of recruiting and coaching is rewiring and telling guys, you have creativity and you have this freedom to play, but you don't need to do that. You don't need to trick out the coverage. You don't need to try to split it every time. You don't need to try to drag it out and drag it all the way across the floor and then re-wiggle it. You don't have to do all the things. You have to get two on the ball. You have to get two on the ball and you've got to get off it. And you've got to be able to play out of that domino or that rotation advantage. And so it's identifying, embracing. The players have to embrace it. I think when you get a complete understanding, and I think this is important, it's understand versus agree, right? Like, you don't have to agree with everything. You don't. As human beings, I think sometimes we get caught as coaches, like, you need to agree with what I'm saying here. You don't have to agree with everything that I say or how I do it. You don't. And but you do need to understand why we're doing it. And if you can't get the understanding, then you're never going to get the embracing of the coverage. Because the guy's going to be like, I don't understand why we're doing this. Why can't I just split it? Now you have a 1-to-1 assist to turnover ratio because you're trying to split every freaking ball screen. I don't understand why I can't just snake the ice. Every time, okay, get two on the ball and play out of the advantage. That's what we're seeking here. So once you get players that embrace that, and I think that's really what made, Jeff and Ben unique, as I give credit here, is like Bennett Sturt, you watch him. He understands what the mission is. It's to get that window. It's to create that window in the middle third. It's to create that pocket. It's to create that two on the ball advantage. And then he's so good. It was a little humble brag for our program. We weren't very good at a lot last year, in first year back at Wyoming. But I know this: we played out of the role as much as anybody in the United States of America. There was three teams that played out of the role, and we played out of the role, man, 9% of the time. And then I think it was, I'm going to do my numbers. Drake was 11.1%. Texas Tech was 10.6%. And we all had over 1.0 points per possession playing out of the role, man. That's me. That's McCollum, and that's Linder. I don't say I'm in that stratosphere or category of any of those guys, but I know this. I learned how to teach our guys to play out of the windows, play out of the role, man, more than any other coaches I've ever been around. And so embracing that blitz or that ice or that lateral or that drop is extremely important, because that's going to tell everybody behind the ball what to do. And those are where our next reads come. So we got a guy on our staff named Chris Thomas. He was in the NBA for a while. And he uses the phrase now to next. This is what we're doing now. What are we doing next? Now to next. And you got to continually live in the space now. You got to play present. But like once now happens, and that pocket pass goes to the five in the short roll, are we on a two side? Are we burning the corner and we sliding? Or what are we doing here? What's next? What's next? How do we get to the next? And that's the art of keeping the flow. And so identify, embrace the coverage as the player's responsibility, and attacking the coverage. Is that's where the collaboration comes in here. So we can absolutely attack a coverage with a guard who's got real wiggle and it's a blitz. We could attack it by hunting the hip of the big man, because our guard's so good, he can get around the hip, and now we can create a downhill 4-on-3 advantage. We can create the advantage because we have a taller guard who's maybe not as fast, by boom, bouncing it out, slipping to the short and swiveling and playing out of that. Or we can bounce it out, spray it, look for spray roll, spray skip, spray kick. And so we can create that advantage and attack that coverage by understanding who our personnel are and what's that plan of attack, right? And so I think you got to have an attack versus ice. You got to have, this is where the rabbit hole, you got to have attack versus ice. You got to have an attack versus a blitz. You got to have attack versus just a quick show, an under, a drop, a level lateral, a switch. And that's it's so it, that scales, that complexity is so that simplicity, just because it's six or seven different coverages, you have to scale that complexity, that simplicity, to become a little bit more complex as you go through all these reads and these progressions. But we spent all summer. I've changed my philosophy here. We spent all summer spacing, respacing, manipulating spacing, identifying, embracing, and attacking coverages, because the majority of the basketball games played nowadays is through the ball screen, and that's the easiest advantage to create. I think the next, probably a little bit more complicated advantages, are playing that hybrid Princeton style offense, Furman, CSU. There's really good teams out there that play through that hybrid Princeton. That's a cutting and screening advantage with ball screens mixed in, is really hard to guard as well.
Tremendous stuff. Now to next, love that phrasing. A lot of things are stimulated by what you said. And I think this is the next level of basketball. If people think we can't get better, we will when trainers and coaches become more aligned on what you just said, right? And this isn't meant to be any trainer. It's literally that they don't know what they don't know. And it's snaking and these different like splits and these different things that you do in a training session aren't the most efficient and effective thing for the team. And I think that speaks to where I want you to go a little bit deeper, and I wasn't expecting this, to talk about how you do get it to the role more. Emphasis, clearly, but that's a big part that I think is missing a lot from college basketball and high school basketball, is playing to the role. And I've said this in development with my role at the NBA. There's a big development lacking with bigs in particular that never touch the ball in space. Whether it's in a get or it's in a pass to the roll, not at the rim, a short roll, play, make decisions. So I think there's levels where we're going to see basketball grow even more. And I think you're hitting on those. So maybe talk a little bit more about getting it to the roll and playing to the roll.
This is good. And there's so many philosophical things I think that go in play here. But all right, if you want to run a point post Air Force Princeton style or a Colorado State Princeton style, then you better have a point post that can pass. And really, if they can pass and shoot, then they're really an unbelievable equal weapon. But they got to have feel and skill, right? And so I watch a lot of these the power fours that have these elite, unbelievable creature feature monsters that are rim runners. They're lob threats. They're catching lobs, right? Now, Jahni Broome, when you watch Jahni Broome play, he had some feeling, some skill. He wasn't quite above the rim guy, but that dude could play the game of basketball. You could just see it. And so I think one for us at college level is you have to recruit skill, right? You have to recruit some feel. It's one of the hardest things to teach is feel, and you have to recruit skill, and you have to recruit feel. And so I can't put anybody in a short roll. Honestly, we'd love for like guys with bad hands and bad feet and can't pass to be able to catch it 15 feet away from the basket and be the primary decision maker. Why wouldn't we just bait every coverage into having that guy with the ball if we could? And so I think you have to recruit skill and feel. That's a big part of this. And then I think this thing is about concept-driven approach. Like, how are you teaching concepts? Because playing from the now to the next, and if the next is that short roll at the elbow, we had Cole Henry last year, who played in a system with Ben Jacobson at Northern Iowa, was five out, and he was a point post. They'd swing it through him. They'd run a ton of open or delay action, razors, rockets, zooms, whatever you want to call it, and he was a decision maker as a five man. And so when we got him, we knew he was going to be a great decision maker for us in the short roll. And you have to have, first and foremost, a guy who has a level of feel and comprehension that can actually play out of that. And the lack of the skill you're talking about, or the feel to play out of that, is if I'm going to maximize the strengths of a 7 foot guy with a 7 foot eight wingspan, I'm just going to throw it up to the rim as much as I possibly can. I think at the mid levels to the lower levels, that we don't have those guys in a lot of ways. And so you're starting to see a lot of these coaches recruit what are now modern basketball players that can play five out spacing. I think pick and pop fives and feel fives are so hard to scheme against. It's the literal number one thing that you have to talk about first on your scout is, how are we going to guard the five man that can pick and pop? Are we going to switch? What are we going to do? Are we going to coverage and recover, stunt? Or are we going to X out on the back? What are we going to do with him? And I think, and to that point, if you're playing a team with a creature who is always in a drop, and now that five's popping, you're literally getting an advantage every single time if that guy can feel and play to the next. And so teaching that, all right, this is where I think Ben scales simplicity at a high level here. All right, I got some stuff right now. I thought we might go this way, which is funny. All right. How do you create the window, right? The window or the pocket, whatever you want to call it. And we like to play a lot out of the middle third. I think Coach Meyer coined this phrase, but the ball is king when it's in the middle third of the floor. And so because of that, there's a lot of different ways that teams can come up right away to stop an initial middle third ball screen. So you have to have short rolls. You got to teach short rolls. You got to teach slips. You got to teach twists or flips, whatever you want to coin those. All right. You have to teach reloads. You have to teach flashing like you're coming up to set the ball screen, but your hands are ready. So we teach setting screens with our hands here all the time. It's because we very rarely ever set screens. We're giving away some secrets here if anybody's scouting us, but we very rarely ever set them. We come up with our hands ready because we may want a hot stove to a short. We may want to tap and turn into a ghost. We may want to just see that our defender's on the inside and play right here off a get and have him chase it. And now we know that most of the time we may just do a dummy action where Ben does this really well with Sturts, is you might let them blow up the first one. So they think they did their job and most of it, look at me, I just defeated the screen and boom, quick wiggle. Now we force the over. Now we get the coverage. Now we got the roll. And the key in the middle third, and we're just talking middle third right now, is discipline corners. You have to stay disciplined in the corner. And then you have to have a guy who knows how to navigate dunker to dunker, which we call creating the over, right? And there's different things that manipulate spacing down there that guy can do. If he's a good shooter, you could change that guy. You could come off exits. Every time you get that under wiggle, reattack, you got an exit now. So now you're moving to a single side tag. You could create an attack the wrap or drive the duck situation. We call it our power eye situation right here. You have your four and your five stacked in the middle third. Whichever way the handler goes, the bottom guy is wrapping or he's ducking in to destroy that space, to destroy the shot blocker's timing, to create a lane for our handler to attack or a window for him to hit the roll. And so teaching that, if we're scaling the simplicity here, is we're going to teach a very basic alignment, right? Just a middle third. I don't care how you come up. You could come up flat. You could come up angled, right? You could twist it. You could come up flat, short it. You could come up, get handoff, wiggle, window, but we do a ton of just what we call keep the flow, 5-EO, 5-EO. We're trying to get everybody to learn how to work together. I think it's, you could do some 3-on-0 stuff, but I've just found that it's way more translatable if you can get five guys to understand. Because if you do 3-on-0 with just the guys in the middle third and the dunker, then those two corners, eager beavers there, they're used to shaking on the outer third or shaking the sideline. Every time something happens, they're just running up and they're just running up and they're taking their man into the tag or they're taking their man into the roll. And we just try to keep our shooters wide. Like you can't be an eager sniper, right? You can't have an itchy trigger finger. You got to be Chris Kyle, man. You got to be calm, cool, collected in the corners. All right. And stay down there and keep that spacing. But that's just one way. That's a middle third. And there's tons of advantages in the middle third. But if you're playing out of an ice in the outer third, right? So you're playing out of ice in the outer third, what's your spacing alignment? And making sure you're driving it down to to get below the wing to create a deeper pocket, a deeper window. All right. And that's just, there's little intricacies there, but I'd be happy to share any keep the flow stuff that we do if we ever come back and do some film breakdown stuff, just to watch patterns. The first thing you're doing is I think you're scripting and teaching a pattern. So if we talk about our dive action, we dive, we come up to the middle third, and we set it. We don't do anything other than we're just kind of set this at an angle and hope that the drop works and the guy actually gets a hit on the guy and he doesn't get over. And we're going to throw that little pocket pass and we're going to go window, finish. And then we're going to go window, corner skip. And then we're going to go window, his man's over helps, corner burn. And we're just going to train that guy to catch, pop his feet, look to finish, catch, pop his feet, look to skip, catch, pop his feet, look to burn. And if you've got a field guy, a post that can play like that, then it's pretty easy for him to pick that up. Now, one Van Gundy, right? One ball screen, anybody can guard. Two ball screens gets a little better. If you can get three ball screens or three advantages in there, it's really hard to defend. At some point, you're going to get a breakdown if you can find that next. And so now we'll come up and we'll set it. And let's say they blow it up. And we'll pop our big. We'll play off the reload. We'll go get it. But that reload's lateral, right? So it's back here. It's lateral right here. That reload's lateral. So that defender is probably going to go under because he doesn't want to create the advantage. Now, chase, boom, chases it under, wiggle. There's our window. And so we let him go under. We bait the under. Hall of Fame footwork. Right back to it. There's our pocket. And you scale that over and over again. And I think it's weird. Our players gets mundane. right? It's the same thing over and over again. Some people do sprint to score, 5-EO in offensive install at the start of practice. We're going to do 5-EO, keep the flow, and we're going to teach how to play out of that window. Because most teams break down offensively. They don't know how to respace after that. What's next? What's next? And you hit that short roll and he goes to the corner. The corner doesn't have a shot and we just follow it. And now we're playing out of an empty. Well, now we got to understand empty spacing as well. So we're stacking all these concepts. We got a middle third action to an empty action that could end up in a fill action all in the same possession. But this is the Indiana Pacers. They call it random offense, right? But it's a concept driven approach to be teaching guys how to play through what we call chop. You got to be able to drive the boat through some choppy waves. You got to be able to play through some stuff and then respace. And I think rather than scripting everything you do as a coach, I've grown a lot in this area, is you have to trust the flow, keep it as much as you possibly can. And then if it's not working, you have to seek that one advantage late shot clock that maybe you know that you can coach, you and as a coach can manipulate and say, two game, come on up here. I need you two in a rub. And then this is the best advantage we can get under 10 seconds. But our philosophy is win the first 10 seconds. We better be able to keep the flow from 20 to 10. Don't panic 9-1. Don't panic. And if you're a flow team, if you're a real flow team, then you know that you can get an elite shot under 5 seconds. You could still get an elite shot under 5 seconds. And we track elite possessions in our program. And possessions are a shot profile stuff, right? So you want paint touch rotation threes. You want advantage or domino threes where you're getting beat outsides and rotations. You're trying to get cutting layups or driving layups in the paint. But an elite possession can happen at any time in the clock, as long as we're making sure it's our shot profile. And this stuff is exciting for me because I'm still like a kid in a candy store. Some of these older coaches have been doing this a long time and I'm still studying everybody. And so it's fun for me to dive into this.
It's so fun to coach conceptually like this. There's no question. I think it's more interesting in a lot of ways because you're always trying to find the advantages and then hunt those matchups and those different things. But it also strikes me as you're saying all of these things. Obviously, it's up my wheelhouse because you're saying like 3-on-0 doesn't help you develop these decisions. And it speaks again to development of players. If coaches are listening to this, yeah, our players, everyone says, oh, players don't know how to play off the ball because we don't ever put them in situations where they have to learn how to play off the ball. And what connects for me is Linder, McCollum, you, coaches that are doing a lot of these things. You play a ton of 5-on-5. You play a ton of 5-on-5. And those two famously play almost all 5-on-5 at different times. And I know I've got texts from Linder, all proud of that. But, you know, that's part of it, isn't it? That to be able to understand these coverages and find coverage solutions, you got to play offense versus defense.
You have to, because I don't know. Now I'm just looking at it objectively from our situation or for any coach who's dealt with the transfer portal is I don't know what they know coming from where they've been. I could see you on film as a player, seeing what you ran at Quinnipiac or what you ran at Florida Atlantic or whatever you did and how you played. But I don't know what they taught you. And I don't know if they told you conflicting habits. I think the hard part about this situation now that we live in is Don Meyer said, you never teach conflicting habits. You can't teach conflicting habits. All right. And it's a funny thing to think about, because if you've had a guy that's been at three schools in 4 years, they're going to be conflicted mentally because they're going to have a prior bias, or maybe they preferred a way a certain coach played and then they went somewhere else. They didn't like it. Now they're hunting for the way they played the first time. And you're still trying to teach them to play your way, our style. And they're still wanting to find the style that made them their happiest. And so you're already trying to rewire habits that have been ingrained since they were little. Now there's two or three different institutions that have been a part of it. And I think I wish we were Men in Black. I wish we could just neuralize guys and then start over and tell them the story we wanted to have.
Can I just, a conflicting habit that I deal with all the time is players being told to move all the time off the ball instead of hold a spot and hold space. And so at the development levels, I deal with that a lot. What's an example at your level that you deal with?
Yeah, this is big. And you're spot on here. We talk about offense is oftentimes about what you don't do that makes it effective.
Love okay? that.
And so it's not just, we can have every solution for how to slide the two side or how to slide the two side or blade or burn or dive or do all this crap. But that's why you have to really make sure, like, what's an automatic for you? What do you really believe in? And so a conflicting habit here, right, for us would be, and we want to be a really good transition defensive team. And we were 346th in the country last year, primarily because of live ball turnovers. We were awful. Way too many live ball turnovers. And that's one of the areas where you have to be good at that. That's a big key to being a championship team is transition offense and transition defense. Not saying you have to play extremely fast, but you better be efficient if you play fast. So for us, when we teach rebounding habits, we're going to be a tag up team this year. We're not going to be very big. We got pretty good speed. And I think we're pretty scrappy and we're pretty mobile, so we can pursue the basketball. We're going to play fast. If we're going to play a little bit more pace, I guess, a little more thrust and be a tag up team, a conflicting habit would be allowing our guys to shoot any shot they want just because we're playing fast. And then saying that our rebounding responsibilities are going to be equal to that at which we play. If we don't know where the shots are coming from or our shot profile, and we just allow guys to play free and fast, I hate that. Free and fast, that's a great way to sell a kid to come to your program. It's an awful way to play basketball because nothing is free in the game of basketball. All right. You have to pay rent on every possession, man. And so for us, if we want to play with pace and have a little bit more thrust this year and shoot bad shots, we know that the bad shot is the first pass in a defensive transition. Jay Billis, I think, said that a while ago. Early out of rhythm shot, a bad shot by a bad player or whatever is going to be the. And we're teaching guys to tag up. Now we're shooting bad shots and we're saying, go tag, go get the offensive rebound. When we're running past, in a lot of ways, where you're running past the defense that doesn't have to do their job, and we're going to be an awful transition defensive team. When the whole point of tagging up, the discipline of that on an offensive rebounding side is to make sure that your man stays in front of you. You have to have the discipline to get 50-50, stay on the high side, and not over pursue the rebound. So we conversely have to understand what our shot profile is. So I can't say take these shots early when we're trying to sprint to score and then say tag up at the same time. I would rather be, if we're going to take those shots, we're going to be like Dick Bennett and the old Green Bay teams. We're going to get five back to attack. If we're going to take early shots that are out of rhythm, or we're going to really die on the hill of a quick three or a quick two, then we're going to get back because we better have a really stingy half court defense. So I've never believed that you could play free and fast both ways.
Love that. And obviously you're not, because you're giving them a structure and then you're giving them triggers and you're giving them ways to be able to create advantages and take advantage of advantages. And again, just connecting all those things together is part of the art of it, as you already alluded to. Coach, before you go, I really want to get into this six championship factors, because I know you put a ton of work into this in terms of diving deep into the data and just figuring out some things that kind of like have helped direct your philosophy. And I think it could be so useful for other people. So maybe first just shape the process of coming up to these six championship factors.
Yeah, I'm going to give a shout out here to Patrick Stacey. He was our general manager last year. He runs JBI, JAM Basketball Intelligence, his advanced scouting. For us at Green Bay, we subscribe to him because when you're lower major levels or Division II, you're jack of all trades, right? You're doing everything, right? You're cleaning out the gear closet. You're still doing it all. Like, you got to have all hands on deck. And he just provided us with an advanced scout as we're playing Thursday, Saturday in the Horizon League. That advanced scout, that quick turnaround time. And I really fell in love with the way he presented his stuff. He presented his information. And I very rarely have I ever seen the outside entity be able to capture, let alone our cultural identity and what we're looking for, be open and communicative. I'm calling him on Sunday mornings while he's going for runs with his dog and just talking analytics and strategy. He's a Billy Beane type, right? Patrick Stacey's really good. That's why he's with Will Wade as the assistant general manager now at North Carolina State. He's a gifted individual with this. And so we spend a lot of time talking about what's important, but not important in the scheme of basketball historically. Okay. This is where it's the modern era of basketball. I don't even know what you want to classify that, 7 years, 10 years, but probably not back 10 years, anywhere between the last 7 to 10 years in the modern era. Since motion stopped becoming relevant, real motion, true motion offenses stopped becoming relevant, and ball screens started kicking in. Right. And then the shot clock got shorter. Right. So, with all these little changes happened, all these little micro nuances, the shot clock got shorter. Freedom of movement became more prevalent. So, the fouls became a little bit more restrictive here. Teams are getting to the free throw line more. And all the things that maybe were important in the late 90s, early 2000s, even on the way up to 2010, 11, 12, I think about like 2014, like shot clock was still 35 seconds. And so, In the modern era of basketball, there's six championship factors, six things that correlate to winning championships at the highest level. And the number one is obviously, and it's, I think this has stood the test of time, even when I was a GA, is shooting, right? Effective field goal percentage or field goal percentage, right? The team that shoots better majority of the time wins. It's very often, if you can put the ball in the hole more than somebody else, you can win the basketball game. And if you just have an average defense, but you shoot way above average and you're a really gifted offensive team, it's going to be hard to stop those programs. And so the idea that defense wins championships, right? You'd love to think that, but shooting oftentimes, ability to score the basketball is really prevalent in being able to win a championship. Now, if you go back to Don Meyer's cycle of the game, I printed off the sheet just for this. This is hilarious. On his website, he has his cycle of the game, right? And these are the things that I got to
I
go through.
remember that
Slash.
sheet.
Cycle of the game sheet, right? It was a big deal. And he talked about defensive coverage, which is your transition and talk, and then your ball pressure, and it goes through your gaps and how you force things. Then your shot contest and your block out and pursue and all these things. Like, this is the cycle of the game. These are the things that matter the most. In a sense, this is the cycle of the game now. Is your team skilled enough to shoot? Can you shoot? Can you score the basketball? Do you have skill? Number two, then your ball screen offensive efficiency. So most teams that you play run ball screens now more than they ever have. And I love ball screens just because that's what I've dove into the last 3 years. We ran percentage ran. We ran more ball screens than anybody else in the United States of America last year. We were not efficient last year. Now, over 380 possessions at Green Bay, we were the number one points per possession team in the country with the pick and roll handler. Number one in the country. A pick and roll handler usage and scoring points per possession out of the pick and roll with the handler. That's pretty good. But last year, we ran more than anybody in the country. We were not very efficient out of it. So ball screen offensive efficiency, you can run a ton of them like we did last year and not be efficient. That doesn't make you a good, if it doesn't make you a good offense, right? You got to have efficiency out of it. All right. Conversely, if it's got to be good, if ball screen offensive efficiency is important, then ball screen defensive efficiency equally important. So not only being able to run ball screens, but able to defend ball screens. Then you go to transition defensive or transition offensive efficiency. So I did a quiz with our guys. I said, we want to play with more pace. I love you. We're not fast and free, but we want to play more pace. All right. The fastest teams in the country. All right, let's look at synergy. The teams that play out of transition the most. And there are teams out there that play, there's 20%, 33% of their stuff is in transition, but they have awful records. Florida Gators played 18% of their possessions in transition, 18%. They were one of the most efficient teams in the country out of transition. But Drake was one of, if not the most efficient team in transition. And we're like, Drake doesn't play fast. No, they don't. 4.9 possessions on average a game that they played in transition. Extremely efficient, though. So you don't have to be fast to be efficient. It's about efficiencies. This is what I think everybody needs to understand, that everything you do has to be about efficiency. Ball screen offensive efficiency and defensive efficiency. Transition offensive efficiency. If it's five possessions a game, great. On average, in 75 possessions, if you play 13% of your possession in transition, you're getting anywhere between 9 to 10, 11 possessions a game. That's not a lot. But you better score on half those. So everybody thinks playing fast is a ton of possessions. It's about how efficiently you play fast. And that's why taking care of the basketball is so huge. All right. So transition offensive, defensive efficiency are four and five. And then lastly is your ability to finish at the rim, right? Which would be what we would classically consider as your ability to attack the paint. The paint touches are still going to be a premium. We still track paint touches more than anything else. It's one of the most important things that we do in our program is how are we getting paint advantages? Can we attack the paint? Because what it does, it's a psychological effect on your opponent. Just getting into the paint over and over again is a psychological effect. It's the wear and tear of tic-tac fouls, of forcing teams to be really good in wall-ups, to be really good at brick walls and walling on wheels and not reaching and not overhelping and not overreacting, where you get the best threes or paint touch or rotation threes or paint touch. I classify them as low paint twos or high paint twos. But these are the six factors over the last 7 years that have correlated to the most success, the teams having the most success to win championships. And it could vary league to league. And a lot of this is probably power four, power five connected, because I think it varies league to league and what's really important based on where you're at. But I know this, if you're solid in these core areas right here, if you're good and if you got skill, you could shoot. If you can defend and run ball screens, because I think that goes hand in hand. Like we get really good at defending ball screens because we practice ball screens, right? We go against it every day. Conversely, you got to have, I mean, you got to have situational transition stuff. basketball is a game a lot of ways of broken rhythm. Transition is the most broken rhythm you'll ever have defensively and offensively in a lot of ways. And so you're trying to be able to get your shell situated, or you're trying to be able to keep those dominoes falling, distort the defensive shell in transition. So you got to have your core transition emphasis every day in practice. Larry Shyatt started every practice at Wyoming with a transition drill, and he said it wouldn't start practice until the gym smelt right. Till it smelt right. That's a scary thing as a player. You'd be there 20 minutes of practicing transition defense because it's got to smell right. It's got to feel right. I got to hear the gym. And I love that what Larry said, but it's one of those things where you got to have transition emphasis every day. And then how are you teaching finishing at the rim? How are you teaching protecting finishing at the rim or defending rim finishes? I think it's important as well.
It's great stuff. It's incredible research, incredible amount of work that you both put into it, and grateful for you to be able to share it. And I'll connect a few things, but really quickly, Larry Shyatt. So I've been to Wyoming, Laramie, Wyoming, twice, because when I was young, and you could do this back then, you could call people up and you could go work basketball camps. Who did I talk to? Matt Driscoll. So
Really?
Matt Driscoll connected me to working Wyoming's camp for 2 weeks. Still, the greatest round of golf I ever had was at altitude up there. It was beautiful. And just an incredible experience and such a beautiful place. I know a lot of people haven't been there, but maybe just as you wrap up here, frame it for you how special it is. I know you're from Wyoming and just an incredible place, really, to have visited in my lifetime.
Man, you've got the golf at Jacoby National, all right? Jacoby National Golf Course. We joke about it out here, but there is beautiful snowy range out here. I think what's really special about this, and I know everybody says we work harder than anybody else in the country. That's what everybody says. Everybody likes to own that identity. We work harder than everybody else in the country. Well, our strength coach is a pretty smart guy. I'm gonna give a shout out to Jimmy Edel here. And Jimmy Edel goes, everybody works hard. But physiologically, just so people can understand the perspective here, why people hate playing at the University of Wyoming. It's because nobody trains at 7,220 feet. Nobody trains all summer long, all fall long, all winter long, all spring long at 7,220 feet, the highest elevation in all of college basketball. And so it is a psychological advantage. There's an altitude advantage. It is a special place because it hurts. Our guys hurt, man. There's an exhaustion. We did a conditioning test today. There's an exhaustion that still happens even after 8 weeks of summer playing at 7,220 feet. But for me, I've known that advantage my entire life, right? I've understood that my entire life, being born and raised in Wyoming and bleeding the brown and gold. I'm the luckiest guy on planet Earth, Chris. And I say that people talk about how lucky they are. And Coach Meyer used to say he's the luckiest man ever. I'm lucky if I have a team. I know that. If I have a team to coach, I'm the luckiest guy in the world. But how many times do you get to be from a place and actually coach at that place? And that doesn't ever happen. And that's how I know, like, I'm extremely fortunate. I'll never take this for granted, but I'll also never take opportunities like this for granted. I've listened to your cast for years. You are one of the best follows on Twitter because of all the information you give. And Coach Meyer was, I know you said a big influence on that. He shared, and I'll leave you with this. So many times we want to think that we have the secret sauce, but sharing is the secret sauce. Because if none of us share, then none of us can grow, and we can't be lifelong learners, and we can't be guardians of the game. And so we need to continue to share and give because Coach Meyer would have the entire Northern Sun sitting up at his coach's clinic going through every single action we ran. And he knew Bemidji was sitting up there and he knew Moorhead was sitting up there. And he'd still sit there and be like, guess what? We got to run it better than you defend it. That's going to happen. And so there are no secrets anymore. Everybody thinks they have them. I sure as crap don't. But I'm so thankful for those that share the secrets of others. So thank you, Chris, for having me on today.
Thank you so much for sharing and just beautiful. And we're going to have you back. I know we already talked about that off air and on air. And we'll have you back and dive deeper for coaches because I know they're going to be intrigued. And I know as well they can reach out to you. And I can see the passion in your voice every second you're sharing. And that's beautiful. So thank you for sharing the game with us.
And you're the best. And if anybody wants the six championship factors or any of the blueprint stuff, like I said, shout out Patrick Stacey. I'll be happy. Just DM me at Coach Sundance on Twitter, at Coach Sundance on Instagram. And I'm happy to send anything out your way, any information. Just sharing the game like you do, growing the game like you do.